Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
Hey, let's be real. If your Mother's Day surprise consists of a really well-crafted text message with some emojis, well, you need to go back to the drawing board. Moms deserve more than emojis. So do it right this year and celebrate all the moms in your life with a special limited time offer from 1-800-Flowers.com. And right now, you can take care of every mom on your list. 1-800-Flowers will give you 24 beautiful multicolored roses and a free vase. It's only $29.99. Now, that's an offer that any mom would approve of. Now, it's a bright, beautiful mix of premium roses and a rainbow of colors. 24 multicolored roses and a free vase, $29.99, an amazing offer. But this offer ends on Thursday. Just pick the delivery date. 1-800-Flowers will handle all the rest. Don't put it off. Now, to order these 24 multicolored roses and a free vase for only $29.99, go to 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. You got to hurry. This offer ends Thursday. I don't think there's a day now we don't start any show without breaking news. All right, moments ago, the president addressed the nation, and the U.S. will be pulling out of this horrific Barack Obama, John Kerry, the Logan Act, Iranian deal. And here's what the president said just moments ago.
My fellow Americans, today I want to update the world on our efforts to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. The Iranian regime is the leading state sponsor of terror. It exports dangerous missiles, fuels conflicts across the Middle East, and supports terrorist proxies and militias such as Hezbollah, Hamas, the Taliban, and Al-Qaeda. Over the years, Iran and its proxies have bombed American embassies and military installations, murdered hundreds of American service members, and kidnapped, imprisoned, and tortured American citizens. The Iranian regime has funded its long reign of chaos and terror by plundering the wealth of its own people. No action taken by the regime has been more dangerous than its pursuit of nuclear weapons and the means of delivering them. In 2015, the previous administration joined with other nations in a deal regarding Iran's nuclear program. This agreement was known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. In theory, the so-called Iran deal was supposed to protect the United States and our allies from the lunacy of an Iranian nuclear bomb, a weapon that will only endanger the survival of the Iranian regime. In fact, the deal allowed Iran to continue enriching uranium and, over time, reach the brink of a nuclear breakout. The deal lifted crippling economic sanctions on Iran in exchange for very weak limits on the regime's nuclear activity and no limits at all on its other malign behavior, including its sinister activities in Syria, Yemen, and other places all around the world. In other words, at the point when the United States had maximum leverage, this disastrous deal gave this regime, and it's a regime of great terror, many billions of dollars, some of it in actual cash, a great embarrassment to me as a citizen and to all citizens of the United States. A constructive deal could easily have been struck at the time, but it wasn't. At the heart of the Iran deal was a giant fiction that a murderous regime desired only a peaceful nuclear energy program. Today, we have definitive proof that this Iranian promise was a lie. Last week, Israel published intelligence documents long concealed by Iran, conclusively showing the Iranian regime and its history of pursuing nuclear weapons. The fact is, this was a horrible one-sided deal that should have never, ever been made. It didn't bring calm. It didn't bring peace. And it never will. In the years since the deal was reached, Iran's military budget has grown by almost 40%, while its economy is doing very badly. After the sanctions were lifted, the dictatorship used its new funds to build nuclear-capable missiles, support terrorism, and cause havoc throughout the Middle East and beyond. The agreement was so poorly negotiated that even if Iran fully complies, the regime can still be on the verge of a nuclear breakout in just a short period of time. The deal's sunset provisions are totally unacceptable. If I allowed this deal to stand, there would soon be a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. Everyone would want their weapons ready by the time Iran had theirs. Making matters worse, the deal's inspection provisions lack adequate mechanisms to prevent, detect, and punish cheating, and don't even have the unqualified right to inspect many important locations, including military facilities. Not only does the deal fail to halt Iran's nuclear ambitions, but it also fails to address the regime's development of ballistic missiles that could deliver nuclear warheads. Finally, the deal does nothing to constrain Iran's destabilizing activities, including its support for terrorism. Since the agreement, Iran's bloody ambitions have grown only more brazen. In light of these glaring flaws, I announced last October that the Iran deal must either be renegotiated or terminated. 3 months later, on January 12th, I repeated these conditions. I made clear that if the deal could not be fixed, the United States would no longer be a party to the agreement. Over the past few months, we have engaged extensively with our allies and partners around the world, including France, Germany, and the United Kingdom. We have also consulted with our friends from across the Middle East. We are unified in our understanding of the threat and in our conviction that Iran must never acquire a nuclear weapon. After these consultations, it is clear to me that we cannot prevent an Iranian nuclear bomb under the decaying and rotten structure of the current agreement. The Iran deal is defective at its core. If we do nothing, we know exactly what will happen. In just a short period of time, the world's leading state sponsor of terror will be on the cusp of acquiring the world's most dangerous weapons. Therefore, I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. In a few moments, I will sign a presidential memorandum to begin reinstating U.S. nuclear sanctions on the Iranian regime. We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction. Any nation that helps Iran in its quest for nuclear weapons could also be strongly sanctioned by the United States. America will not be held hostage to nuclear blackmail. We will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. And we will not allow a regime that chants death to America to gain access to the most deadly weapons on Earth. Today's action sends a critical message. The United States no longer makes empty threats. When I make promises, I keep them. In fact, at this very moment, Secretary Pompeo is on his way to North Korea in preparation for my upcoming meeting with Kim Jong-un. Plans are being made, relationships are building. Hopefully, a deal will happen. And with the help of China, South Korea, and Japan, a future of great prosperity and security can be achieved for everyone. As we exit the Iran deal, we will be working with our allies to find a real, comprehensive, and lasting solution to the Iranian nuclear threat. This will include efforts to eliminate the threat of Iran's ballistic missile program, to stop its terrorist activities worldwide, and to block its menacing activity across the Middle East. In the meantime, powerful sanctions will go into full effect. If the regime continues its nuclear aspirations, it will have bigger problems than it has ever had before. Finally, I want to deliver a message to the long-suffering people of Iran. The people of America stand with you. It has now been almost 40 years since this dictatorship seized power and took a proud nation hostage. Most of Iran's 80 million citizens have sadly never known an Iran that prospered in peace with its neighbors and commanded the admiration of the world. But the future of Iran belongs to its people. They are the rightful heirs to a rich culture and an ancient land, and they deserve a nation that does justice to their dreams, honor to their history, and glory to God. Iran's leaders will naturally say that they refuse to negotiate a new deal. They refuse, and that's fine. I'd probably say the same thing if I was in their position. But the fact is, they are going to want to make a new and lasting deal, one that benefits all of Iran and the Iranian people. When they do, I am ready, willing, and able. Great things can happen for Iran, and great things can happen for the peace and stability that we all want in the Middle East. There has been enough suffering, death, and destruction. Let it end now. Thank you. God bless you.
This is history in the making, and that is the President of the United States announcing the withdrawal of what was the worst deal in American history, and that was the $150 billion in cash and other currencies that the Obama administration, John Kerry and company, handed to the mullahs in Iran. They chanted death to America before the deal. They've chanted it after the deal. The president goes on to say that the sanctions will be reinstated at the highest level possible, that the United States will not be held hostage with nuclear blackmail as it relates to Iran, and thus keeping what was a major, major campaign promise by the president. Of course, the left is going nuts. As the president announces this, the new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is headed to work out the arrangements on the North Korean summit, which will then deal with the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. You know, it's Churchill versus Chamberlain. It's Reagan versus Carter, Reagan versus Clinton. It's Obama versus Trump. It's appeasement versus peace through strength. One works, one doesn't. All right, well, a full commentary on all of this coming up in the course of the program. The amazing developments in the state of New York with the Attorney General of New York. We'll get to that today. Did John Kerry violate the Logan Act as he has been doing his own little diplomacy behind Donald Trump's back? And much more coming up in the course of the program, the latest on Deep State Gate and more. I know how the liberal mind works. After 30 years of radio and 23 years on Fox and doing a debate show with my friend Alan Combs, who passed away, I just know how the liberal mind works. For whatever reason, there is a belief, in spite of all history to the contrary, that weakness incurs aggression. There is a belief among liberals. Oh, he just withdrew from the Iranian nuclear deal. Iran is going to get angry, and they're going to be upset. Neville Chamberlain, you know, after the meeting with Hitler in Munich, it's the classic reference to appeasement. You know, we, the German Führer, the Chancellor, the British Prime Minister, have had a further meeting today and agreed in recognizing the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries of Europe. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again. We are resolved that the method of consultation shall be the method adopted to deal with any other question that may concern our two countries. We are determined to continue our efforts to remove possible sources of difference and thus to contribute to assure the peace of Europe. And my good friends, Chamberlain said, right in front of 10 Downey Street, my good friends, for the second time in our history, a British prime minister has returned from Germany bringing peace with honor. I believe it is peace for our time. Go home and get a nice, quiet sleep. Now, Bill Clinton swore when he met with Kim Jong-il of North Korea, Kim Jong-un's father, and agreed to billions of dollars in energy subsidies, etc. He told him, this is a good deal for the American people. He thought he could bribe his way to peace. Well, now we're dealing with the aftermath of that today. And here's the guy that says, little rocket man, and my button's bigger than yours and actually works. And it brings Kim Jong-un to the table. And we're talking about denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And similarly, Obama thinks $150 billion. We're just nicer to the mullahs in Iran. Maybe they'll stop chanting death to America. Maybe they won't want to destroy Israel anymore. Maybe they'll recognize we're good people. And if we're nicer to them, they're going to be nicer to us. Appeasement never works. Peace through strength. Trust but verify. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. 800-941. Sean is our number. And you've just, if we don't learn the lessons of history, we're doomed to repeat it. Here's the danger if you're dealing with a rogue regime, dictators, despots, murdering regimes like Iran. I mean, we know that they're responsible for fomenting terror, not only in the entire Middle East region, but the world. We know that they fund terrorists and terrorist organizations. We know that Iran has killed American soldiers during the Iraq War. We know that Iran is the number one terrorist nation in the world. You know, when people are chanting death to your country and death to your biggest ally, death to America, death to Israel, you ought to listen to them. It is a mindset that I cannot wrap my arms around, that the left has, that somehow that if they think that we're just a little nicer, we've got to show them kindness. You know, if we'll give them money. Just say, see here, money, $150 billion. You can still spin your centrifuges. You can still have a nuclear program. And at the end of it, you can have nuclear weapons. We just don't want it right now. And somehow believe this. I find it breathtakingly stupid and naive. Yeah, I think that this deal that Obama made, it's breathtakingly stupid and naive. Just like I think Bill Clinton's belief in Kim Jong-il, that if we bribed him, he would stop his nuclear ambitions. It doesn't work. I wish it did. Look, I wish evil didn't exist in the world. Wrote a whole book, Deliver Us from Evil, Defeating Terrorism, Despotism, and the flawed ideology of liberalism, which is an appeasement ideology. Remember, people were livid at the title when I wrote it in 2004. And as part of the research of that book, what did we learn? 100 million human souls slaughtered under communism and fascism and Nazism and Imperial Japan. And, you know, we saw the killing fields of Cambodia. We don't learn. And everybody, the same thing happened in the lead up. I know that the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is on his way to, I guess, make the final arrangements for the summit with President Trump and Kim Jong-un. Now, I don't know what the result of that is going to be, but I know that he's not firing rockets right now over Japan or threatening Guam or threatening the entire region. I never thought in my lifetime, I'd see Kim Jong-un cross over the DMZ into the arms of the South Korean president. So we have a real champ. But when Donald Trump was calling him Little Rocket Man, and then when he put all these carrier strike force groups right there in the Korean Peninsula, right on the border, which means we had the military capability of taking them out, it sent a message. America means what it says. You know, it's funny. I guess Lindsey Graham, I guess, could never make up his mind about Donald Trump. He's hot and cold. I mean, it's, you never know where Lindsey Graham's going to fall on any given issue on any given day sometimes. But, you know, yeah, if you don't think the president's a little crazy, then you're not understanding. Okay, maybe a little. They said the same thing about Reagan. An amiable dunce. That was said by Republicans. And Reagan went to the wall. And his own advisors, every time he'd draft the speech and he'd put in the words, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And lo and behold, it worked. And we were able to, and Reagan's defense buildup played a big part of it. Well, the president's relationship with China played a big part in squeezing North Korea financially. And the president is his own man. How many times in the campaign did he say, we've got to get out of this bad deal? You know, an amazing moment is happening in terms of a new configuration of alliances is unfolding before our very eyes. And if it all works out well, the world's going to be a much better and a much safer place, in part because of President Trump's policies of strength and meaning what he says. The world now knows Donald Trump doesn't make idle threats. I'm withdrawing from this Iranian deal. I am putting in the maximum, the highest amount of sanctions possible. The United States is not going to be held hostage with nuclear blackmail by Iranian mullahs. It's the right message to send. We don't want war. We don't want to have to obliterate North Korea or Iran. It's really, the choice is going to be up to them. You know, this idea that if we're just nicer to them, they've got to decide they want to be a part of the world community because their people are suffering, both in North Korea and Iran. And lo and behold, you're watching this unfold at a very accelerated rate. Art Bell wrote a book once called The Quickening. Yeah, it seems like the news cycle is as fast as it's ever been in my lifetime. Now, this doesn't come without risks. I mean, you're dealing with unpredictable, angry, egotistical, ideological, radical Islamist in Iran. Israel's army is on high alert. They want to take on Israel. They will pay a price. And the United States will support them. You know, bomb shelters have opened up in the Golan Heights. There's an unusual movement of Iranian forces. It's probably all these headlines are on George today. That's just probably a show of nothing, in my opinion. The Iranian president is warning of problems. Okay, well, they threaten to blow us up and annihilate us anyway. Let's see what happens. But look at what the threat of a nuclear armed Iran and Iranian hegemony, or possibility of Iranian hegemony, has created. An unprecedented alliance now exists between the United States, our best allies in the Middle East, Israel. You cannot deny that it is one of the biggest intelligence coups ever that the Israelis were able to get all of that intelligence on Iranians' nuclear ambitions and their plans and their activities. As was articulated in a powerful PowerPoint by Prime Minister Netanyahu, who's always had moral clarity. He doesn't have the benefit of not having moral clarity. He better see clearly because he's been surrounded by enemies his entire life. And the threat of this one little nation and what this nation has endured since it's you know, the UN partition plan in 1948. They were attacked the next day. They were attacked the 67 war, the 73 war. You know, I went to Sarot, which is on the border of Gaza. Been to Israel twice now. Stopped by the local police station, a town that has been hit with 10,000 rockets in 10 years. They can't even build outdoor playgrounds for kids because it's such close proximity to Gaza that all the rockets get fired. You don't have enough time to get out of the way. And I showed the images of these things and the tunnels that they dig. They use Israeli cement, Israeli electricity that is given to help the people, the Palestinian people, and it's used as to build tunnels to kill Israelis and, if they can, Americans. I've been in the tunnels. It's the amount of work and the engineer. It's extensive. If only that cement, if only that energy were used for productive reasons. You know, all of that would be better for the entire world. You have a president here that is making promises and keeping it, keeping all of them. That means the world now understands he means what he says. That now means that if he goes on the world stage and the president says, oh, I'm going to do A, B, C, or D, it's going to happen. And he's not offering to bribe despots and dictators and mullahs that adhere to the most radical form of Islam and want to and chant openly death to America and death to Israel. Now, this is a game changer. There is a Washington Post story that has just come out. The Iranian president, Rouhani, said today that he directed his diplomats to negotiate with European countries as well as Russia and China about remaining in the nuclear deal despite the U.S. withdrawal. That's not going to work without the United States and with the United States also putting on the maximum amount of sanctions. And the president warning others that if they help out Iran, they're going to pay a price as well. So this deal, for all intent and purposes, is dead. The only thing we can't get back is the $140 or $50 billion that Barack Obama and John Kerry handed over to Iran. Now, here's an interesting political side note to all this, or sidebar to all this. CNN has a poll out today. And just like Reuters explaining yesterday, we think this is an outlier poll because 50% of independents would vote for Donald Trump again. So we're not counting this poll. Oh, if it's favorable for Donald Trump, don't count it. Anyway, CNN's poll, president's approval rating holding steady, but 6 in 10 now say that things in this country are going very well. Well, look at all the economic statistics that we throw at you on a fairly regular basis. Look at everything we've talked about. 3.5 million jobs now have been created. America is now moving towards energy independence. The president has gotten rid of all these burdensome regulations. He's put the tax cuts in place. I know the media never talks about it because they'd rather talk about Stormy Daniels again and again and again. Basically, Stormy's attorney lives on cable TV 24/7. That's not the biggest issue facing the country by a long stretch. And, you know, as we watch all of this happening here, we're beginning to see that the policies of the president, here's what's going to be important come 2018 on election day. This is now going to be a referendum, maybe one of the most important midterm elections in our life, because it's going to be a referendum election on whether or not the Democrats get power, because if they get it, they want to impeach the president. And I think that's going to motivate a lot of the president's supporters to get out there and vote for this president so that doesn't happen. You know, look at these numbers. April saw the biggest budget surplus in U.S. history. I doubt fake news CNN or conspiracy TV MSNBC said anything about it. As I predicted at the time, and I did predict it all at the time, that these tax cuts, just like Reagan's tax cuts, just like Kennedy's tax cuts, they're going to end up with more revenues coming into the federal government because it stimulates the economy, it's economic growth, and the president is incentivizing by lifting burdensome regulation, lowering taxes. He's incentivizing companies to build and not go to Mexico anymore or not go to other countries anymore. And it's putting Americans back to work. In fact, it's so substantial, this federal budget ran a surplus for the month of April. All told, the government collected $515 billion and only spent $297 billion for a $218 billion surplus. Now, that swamped the previous monthly record of $190 billion that was set in 2001. Well, that is a huge success. And by the way, on the housing side, everybody's dream is to have a house. I remember when I got my first house, I was in Atlanta, Georgia. I paid $123,000 for it. It was at the end of a cul-de-sac. It had an acre, and I was the happiest person on earth. And I put in new tiles, and I painted it, and I fixed the rooms, and I, you know, I did everything I could do to make that look the best I could. And that's everybody's dream. Well, now housing confidence, which, by the way, that ends up being people's biggest, when you think about it, that is people's biggest investment. Anyway, record home prices skyrocketing, which is good for the average American. All right, how dangerous is this Iranian regime? I mean, really, how dangerous are they? Do they mean it when they say death to Israel, death to America? Do they mean what they say? I think the answer is obviously yes. We're going to have a big debate coming up on that in the next hour. Also, our friend Ron DeSantis of the Freedom Caucus, we're going to update you on what is Deep State Gate. I mean, this is pretty amazing. The slow walking, the noncompliance, the absolute lying as it comes to redactions, because the Department of Justice just refuses to hand over to Congress, that has total constitutional oversight power, the documents that they need to do their job, and that is to dig deep about FISA abuse, dig deep as it relates to Hillary's email server scandal and the lies that were told and the rigging of the investigation. And so now, finally, the Freedom Caucus and Ron DeSantis is a part of that, and others are saying, okay, we're going to hold you all in contempt, starting with the Attorney General. And I said last night on TV, you know, Attorney General Sessions, where are you? You have got to engage. This is their job. Slow walking, lying about redactions, and not handing over subpoenaed documents cannot continue.
Over the past few months, we have engaged extensively with our allies and partners around the world, including France, Germany, and the United Kingdom. We have also consulted with our friends from across the Middle East. We are unified in our understanding of the threat and in our conviction that Iran must never acquire a nuclear weapon. After these consultations, it is clear to me that we cannot prevent an Iranian nuclear bomb under the decaying and rotten structure of the current agreement. The Iran deal is defective at its core. If we do nothing, we know exactly what will happen. In just a short period of time, the world's leading state sponsor of terror will be on the cusp of acquiring the world's most dangerous weapons. Therefore, I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction. Any nation that helps Iran in its quest for nuclear weapons could also be strongly sanctioned by the United States. America will not be held hostage to nuclear blackmail. We will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. And we will not allow a regime that chants death to America to gain access to the most deadly weapons on earth. Today's action sends a critical message. The United States no longer makes empty threats. When I make promises, I keep them.
All right, that's the president of the United States pulling out of the Iranian deal, withdrawing from that deal, and rightly pointing out that this will probably, like every other bad deal of appeasement, end in a potential disaster. Who would ever want that on their head? Radical Islamic terrorists married to weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons, and the missile capability that would go along with it. Well, apparently Dianne Feinstein didn't see the presentation of the Prime Minister of Israel last week because she's now complaining that Donald Trump is undoing everything that Obama did. Yeah, that's in part why the disruptor guy was elected. Yeah, that's why he was elected, to undo the damage. By the way, I'd say that's a pretty tall order as she, you know, reacted to all of this. But he's getting there. European leaders, I don't really care what they have to say either. They released a joint statement condemning the president's decision to withdraw from the Iranian deal. Obama now has weighed in himself and says the decision is so misguided. Walking away from this deal turns our back on America's closest allies and an agreement that our country's leading diplomats, scientists, intelligence professionals negotiated. Maybe you didn't see, Mr. Obama, what Prime Minister Netanyahu. I know you don't like him because I know you get all upset when foreign countries try and interfere in elections and you tried to defeat our closest ally, Bibi Netanyahu. I know it didn't work out the way you wanted, but you did try. And yet everyone complains about foreign interference. Obama interfered in the Israeli elections and even used taxpayers' money. Just a side note. But the Prime Minister of Israel, who pointed out that the world was being duped, the Iranians were lying, the Iranians did have a nuclear program, that it was sustained, one of the biggest intelligence coups ever in the history of the world, the Israelis getting that information and then providing it to the rest of the world, that they were duped yet again by radical mullahs in Iran. How many times are you going to allow this to happen? How many times do we allow the United States to get played? You know, that we think we can bribe our way into some type of peaceful arrangement with despots and dictators and mullahs in Iran that want us dead. Anyway, this is history in the making. I've never seen a president make so many promises and mean them and actually keep them. Anyway, Harry Kazantzis is with us. He's the director of studies, defense studies at the Center for National Interest. Brigitte Gabriel is the chairman of ACT for America, the largest national security grassroots organization in the U.S. Brigitte, this is something that I know that you have wanted for a very long time. I've wanted for a very long time. I think the American people wanted it as well, which is why Donald Trump in part was elected. And we see now the wide-ranging success in the region. Look, who would have ever thunk it? The United States, Israel, the Saudis, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, and the Emirates all aligned together, you know, fighting back Iranian hegemony in the region. Amazing.
It is amazing. Actually, President Trump is bringing world peace and bringing peace to the world through strength, and that's exactly what we needed. He is reinstating America's leadership around the world, where our allies know that they can count on America in standing with them and defending them. And look, because of his strength and his policy, who would have thought that, like you said, the Saudis and the Israelis are now working together. Now the Israelis can fly over Saudi airspace. Iran, basically, it had become so evil that it drove Saudi Arabia to work with Israel in recognizing that Iran is a threat to all of the Middle East in trying to establish hegemony across the Middle East. It's an evil regime that has supported its proxy army in Syria, is actually using Syrian bases to launch drone attacks against Israel, pass weapons to Hezbollah in Lebanon, setting up Hezbollah in Lebanon. Look, I just returned from Israel 3 weeks ago, and I stood overlooking Lebanon, and you cannot believe the influx of cash that you can see right now in the buildings of Hezbollah territories in the region. Every third house is built in southern Lebanon right now is a base for Hezbollah. So that's what Iran did with the money, and good for President Trump for putting America first and making America safe and secure again.
People forget your background and the environment you grew up in. Just quickly remind people.
I was born and raised in Lebanon. My 9/11 happened to me in 1975 when radical Islamists blew up my home, burying me under the rebel wounded. I ended up living in a bomb shelter for 7 years of my life and later ended up moving to Israel. And from Israel, I came to the United States. What's so sad, Sean, is I went back to Israel after 30 years a few weeks ago, and I couldn't even enter Lebanon because Hezbollah wants my head on a platter. They simply because I'm a friend of Israel. They are so dedicated to the destruction of Israel, and they feel empowered after 8 years of the Obama administration working with the Iranians. They can smell Israeli blood. President Trump is exactly what the region needed in order to basically enforce peace in the Middle East.
Let me get your take on the deal, Harry, and also the emerging alliance that I don't think anybody would have predicted even a year and a half ago, with the Jordanians, Egyptians, the Saudis, the Israelis, the United States, the Emirates. I mean, it's beyond historic, sharing intelligence. And in many ways, Iran brought all of them together.
Well, you're right, Sean, and it is historic, and I think it's just really the region, and everybody's sort of getting behind President Trump, because let's face it, do you want to take Iran on now, that, you know, when they were in the JCPOA, being able to, you know, pump out lots of oil and natural gas and make billions of dollars every year, or, you know, do you want to take them on 10 years from now when they're much more powerful? So I think the president was making the right decision, and if you look at this deal, Sean, I mean, I think everybody's pretty much commented on this, but you can see the holes. They're as big as Swiss cheese. And I think there's another example of, you know, President Obama just having this, you know, Band-Aid sort of foreign policy where you put all these little patches on problems, but you never really fix the problems. I mean, we all know the deal ends basically in 2025 when the Iranians can just pull out and start building nuclear weapons and building up their nuclear infrastructure. I think everybody knew that. That was never fixed. Also, the Iranians could build missiles right now when the deal was in place, and nobody did anything about that. And I think it's pretty clear that the Iranians and the North Koreans had very strong connections. And considering the amount of oil money the Iranians have, they could go to Kim Jong-un very easily and say, look, why don't you give us a couple thumb drives of all your ICBM technology? We'll give you a couple $1 billion. And within a few years, the Iranians would have, you know, fully working ICBMs, at least in a, you know, sort of crude format that they'd be able to pair with a nuclear weapon. But I think the biggest thing that we were sold, Sean, in terms of a bad bill of goods is that this was never going to change Iranian behavior. They were still going to cause problems in Iraq. They were still going to cause problems in Syria. They were still going to cause problems in Yemen. And they were still going to cause problems all around Israel's borders. So when you think about all those things, plus the fact that Obama didn't even have the guts to make this a treaty and give it to the Senate and actually put political capital in to actually get it passed, the whole thing was a farce.
Yeah, but it is a mindset that I will never understand. And that is that you think that, or some of these leaders think that they can buy their way to peace and happiness. And historically, it's never worked. And nobody predicted North Korea would come to the table and talk the denuclearization of the entire peninsula. But Donald Trump sending carrier strike force groups there, I'm sure, had an impact. Trump calling Kim Jong-un Little Rocket Man had an impact. I don't understand why we don't learn these lessons, Brigitte.
We don't learn these lessons, and we need to learn from them. And he brought up a good point here. Remember how Ahmadinejad visited North Korea in 2006 and 2007 and watched their missile test? I remember the leftist media here laughing, thinking, oh, the missile, you know, hit its mark. It didn't go anywhere. But the Iranians under Ahmadinejad back 10 years ago were already talking to the North Koreans and thinking, okay, how can we come together here against the Americans? So what President Trump is doing right now is unprecedented. Good for him. Kudos for him. And we also have to give kudos and a tap in the back for the Israelis. Look, if it wasn't for the Israelis, remember when they bombed the Iranian nuclear reactor in Iraq back in 1982? Can you imagine what type of dictator we would have dealt with under Saddam Hussein if Israel did not do the operation in 1982? They did the same thing in Syria back in 2007, where they bombed the nuclear facility that the Syrians were developing with the help of the North Koreans. The only reason we found out about it is because the leadership of Hamas in Syria felt so insulted and said something about it. And finally, here today, Israel is again warning the world about nuclear a nuclear Iran. We better start listening to the Israelis. They have the human intelligence. They know what they're talking about. And we need to make sure that we work with them to ensure security and safety across the globe. Because it is not only Israel that is threatened by such radical regime. It's the United States. Remember, Israel is the little Satan. America is the great Satan.
All right, we're going to end it there. Thank you both, Harry and Brigitte. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. I know a lot of you want to respond. We have other news. James Comey, by the way, today attacking this judge in the Manafort case. And we'll get to other news about James Comey. Pretty unbelievable, actually. Now let's grab a phone call here. I know a lot of you have been patient. Let's say hi to James. He's in Chattanooga in Tennessee. James, thanks for your patience. How are you? And welcome to the program.
Thank you. Sean, I want to say that we watch you all the time. You're doing a great, doing the country a great service. I have to say that I back Donald Trump 100% on this Iran deal. And everything that I've heard him do, he is the first president that has made promises and doing his level best to fulfill them. We live conservative, we believe conservative, and we vote conservative, and we back him 100%. I have to say that 99.9% out of 100 of the Democrats are just like Hillary Clinton. You have to look at their mouth to see their lips moving, because they're always breaking wind.
You know, I will tell you this, and I mean this sincerely. The number of people like you, James, that tell me every day that you're supporting the show and you want me to keep going forward, and you understand that we've really hit a nerve here. And the nerve is, we're exposing corruption and abuse of power at the highest levels of government. We are exposing crimes that were committed by Hillary and a cover-up of monumental proportions. We are uncovering, again, it's just a select few in the highest levels of government that literally abused the powerful tools of intelligence, like in the FISA abuse case, lied to a FISA court judge in an original application, three subsequent applications. They never verified the Hillary Clinton bought and paid for Russian propaganda using this foreign national, funneling the money through a law firm to Fusion GPS. And we've nailed it. And we see day by day, you know, one block comes tumbling down, one domino after another, and the entire Russia-Trump collusion narrative is over. And now they're stuck on Stormy Daniels. You're having a big impact. I just want to say to you, thank you.
Well, we don't watch FNN, which is the fake news network. We don't watch them. We don't watch the MSNB kissing up to Hillary and Obama network. We watch Fox, and that's, you know, we do watch our local news to get the local news, but then, you know, we watch Fox News Network. And you're all doing a great job.
Believe me, we're doing such a good job. They want to silence us every day. But we appreciate it, James. It means more than you know. When we come back, we'll take more calls. We got our news roundup, information overload. We have Ron DeSantis, Mick Mulvaney coming up. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. You know, nobody is talking about the Logan Act. You know, this law is two centuries old. No one's ever been convicted of it, so it's an important point to make. Kerry's interference, it is the president of the United States who is the commander-in-chief. It's not the former secretary of state that gets to decide if this is in the best interest of the American people. That's why we have elections. Think back to the Manafort judge on Friday. Think back to unfettered power. The American people don't want any one branch of government to have unfettered power. Our framers, our founders never wanted such. And for John Kerry, I mean, what's so fascinating about this, here you have General Michael Flynn incoming national security advisor, and, you know, all these people making accusations, he violated the Logan Act. No, he didn't. He was doing his job, reaching out to his soon-to-be counterpart, yes, in Russia and elsewhere, I think 35 other countries, in preparation to take the job of national security advisor seriously. You know, and that's why there were these conversations. You know, they weren't acting as private citizens. General Flynn was acting as the appointed, soon to be, national security advisor. John Kerry now is a private citizen. And his idiotic, insane Iran advocacy and his direct talks to undermine and interfere with a stated position of the current president, that makes it hard for this president to do his job. And yeah, probably is illegal, but put that aside for a second. We have an update on the issues. I honestly think we're on the brink here of something pretty profound happening. If the Department of Justice, and that means Jeff Sessions, I have always liked Jeff Sessions. It hurts me to now have to be so critical. I don't know what he's doing. I have no earthly idea what he's doing. And to watch the Department of Justice, knowing we have co-equal branches of government, knowing we have separation of powers, knowing and believing that there's a constitutional role of congressional oversight as it relates to the executive branch and all of these different agencies, what they have been doing by slow walking subpoena documents, by putting in redactions that and claiming falsely that they deal with national security. You know, the Comey case last week was just the latest example. You know, they redacted that Comey and FBI agents never thought General Flynn lied. That's not a national security issue. That's an embarrassment issue. They didn't want to be embarrassed by it. And not only that, then just outright just ignoring subpoenas of Congress, and Congress can't do their job. Now Devin Nunes and Congressman Mark Meadows and other Freedom Caucus members are now saying, you're obstructing Congress. They have a constitutional oversight authority. And the DOJ, you know, what they are doing and hiding here is contempt of Congress. You know, it's like the FBI, DOJ redact the Intel Committee's report, preventing them that would expose James Comey's lie. You know, it was my friend Greg Jarrett on his adoration tour, he called it, which is hilarious. Comey insisted three times he never told the committee that FBI agents had concluded, including Peter Strzok, that General Flynn told the truth. Why did they redact that? Why are they slow walking this? Now, contempt is the first step in the process. We, the people, we trust, you know, people, you know, we want to get to the truth, but we shouldn't take 400 years to get to the truth. Now, the president, I think at some point, is going to expedite the release of all this information because he has an authority to declassify it all. That's within his ability and powers. Thought everybody said sunshine is the best disinfectant. The Mueller investigation continues to be a disaster, as we pointed out yesterday. You got these FBI resignations. That's all out there. I think one of the more shocking developments I've ever seen in my life is happening in the state of New York. I honestly have had no dealings with Eric Schneiderman, who was up to last night, was the attorney general of the state of New York. And anyway, with the most bizarre thing that came out of this was Donald Trump's tweet in September of 2013 to Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer, both New York Democrats with national political ambitions brought down by sex charges. You know, obviously one with a hooker and the other one with whatever he was doing. Anyway, respectively. I guess sexting with a minor. He literally tweeted back in 2013. Wiener's gone. Spitzer's gone. Next will be lightweight AG Eric Schneiderman. Is he a crook? Wait and see. Worse than Spitzer or Wiener? Donald Trump tweeted that. That's pretty amazing, actually. You know, and there was always bad blood between the Attorney General or Schneiderman and Donald Trump. No one is above the law. I will continue to remind President Trump and his administration of that fact every day. Now, there was a story out that Mueller, this had come out fairly recently, that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, reportedly was working with the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, on his inquiry into alleged Russian interference in the 2016 presidential race. Now, that was first published by Politico. If true, it would be the latest fact undermining the integrity and impartiality of Mueller's inquiry because Schneiderman hated Trump. Remember that whole Trump University issue that was, I guess, eventually settled. And Mueller already has hired all Democratic donors, even the latest hire just last week, another Democrat. And Andrew Weissman, who led the team of attorneys in court against Paul Manafort. By the way, I'd like to invite Paul Manafort on this radio program. He has a gag order. He's not allowed to talk. Well, I thought people had First Amendment. Why can't he talk? Plenty of leaks coming out of all these offices. Glad you're with us. We were talking about Eric Schneiderman, who is the, you know, wait and see, worse than Spitzer and Wiener. And Donald Trump, it's amazing. He knew about bin Laden before 9/11. There's been so many of those instances, actually, that he is way ahead of the curve. He had to have known something. And they had, I guess, a big brouhaha at Trump University. And I don't know what other issues, to be really blunt about it. Anyway, this was a piece by Ronan Farrow. He is the son of Woody Allen and Mia Farrow, Jane Mayer, who reports for The New Yorker. And apparently the attorney general is accused by multiple women of serious violent physical violence. I mean, the allegations coming from two women who spoke on the record, two others anonymously, that the attorney general of New York repeatedly hit them, often after drinking. Like, I mean, talking about slapping them as hard as they can. And first, in response to the report, he issued a brief statement. It was a quasi-denial of the allegations, maintaining that his experiences with the accusers were consensual. And in the privacy of intimate relationships, I have engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. I have not assaulted anyone. I have never engaged in non-consensual sex, which is a line I could not cross. That is a weird statement to me. Anyway, and then he retired, you know, 3 hours later. James Comey, who has yet to explain why he's lied in multiple TV interviews last week about whether Michael Flynn misled the FBI, is now attacking the judge who gave this beatdown on the Manafort case on Friday. He actually said, you know, coming on Tuesday, criticizing the judge who voiced skepticism. I don't know how a federal judge could possibly know enough about an investigation to offer a view like that, he told the Washington Post. One thing is clear, and I've read all 50 pages four times, is that this judge, his name is T.S. Ellis III, knew everything about this case, and he knew it in extraordinary detail. It's the facts that James Comey doesn't like. How is Paul Manafort's financial dealings, not with Russia, but with the Ukraine in the years 2005 to 2007, how is that in any way related to Trump-Russia collusion? And he said, well, I've been around a long time, and he's a Reagan appointee. And, oh, by the way, we usually do this for drug dealers and people like that, and it's called putting the screws to somebody in the hopes that they sing, but meaning that they'll say what you want said, and it's obvious you want to put the screws to Paul Manafort so that, you know, it may lead to the prosecution or the impeachment of Donald Trump. And by the way, you got to be careful when people sing, they often compose. I think that line's been misinterpreted by some people. I mean, what he's saying, compose, is a suggestion that if somebody's facing 30 years in prison, they might say anything to get out of that basic death sentence. It would be a death sentence for Paul Manafort. So that's what he was suggesting. And that's the danger. And he talked about how basically, you know, what does this have to do with the original mandate? And then we get to an issue, they alluded to it, but I think it needs more focus. And that is that they, you know, they had to have been investigating Manafort long before they raided his home. They didn't just take the Justice Department files and say, all right, we're going to put the screws to this guy. Well, the raid of the home of Paul Manafort, you know, dawn raid, typical Weissman style, the pit bull of Robert Mueller, that happened on July 26th. The separate additional mandate from the acting attorney general because of Jeff Sessions' recusal, Rod Rosenstein, well, that didn't happen until August the 2nd. Now, usually, if you're going to give approval to expand the original mandate, which is to investigate Trump-Russia collusion, you would give that before they raid the guy's home. But they did it post-raid. And I think that's going to end up being a big problem. Now, you can't predict what judges are going to do. I'm not going to sit here and predict what the judge is going to do in this particular case. But, you know, often people make that mistake because the judge says something. And I've seen time after time after time, it doesn't often or always work out that way. One other weird thing that I found that I think we ought to focus on here is Comey, who used to run America's, you know, premier domestic intelligence agency, actually admitted today that he had no idea that the agent he selected to head up the top secret, super politically sensitive probe into Hillary Clinton's email server was a big Trump hater and involved with this other FBI employee. Peter Strzok, you know, was with Lisa Page, the Lovebirds. Anyway, an obvious target for blackmail. But Comey indicated today, oh, he didn't find out that the guy that interviewed Hillary that was so anti-Donald Trump, meanwhile, they were beginning the exoneration writing process. Well, that was happening long before they ever interviewed Hillary. So he didn't pick up in any of those conversations in any way, shape, matter, or form. Nothing that Peter Strzok didn't like Donald Trump. I'm having a hard time buying that. I'm having a hard time believing that. Anyway, so the Daily Caller reports Comey told the Washington Post that the inspector general's finding on Strzok and Page were both terrible and great. It was incredibly painful to see people exhibiting appalling judgment. First of all, having an affair, using FBI devices to communicate, and in the course of communicating, bad-mouthing not just President Donald Trump, but everybody near, as I can tell. So that's obviously bad, he added. And if Comey thought the Strzok-Page affair was appalling, well, maybe he would have removed Strzok from the Hillary probe had he known about it. Instead, Comey had so much faith in Strzok that it was Strzok that did the interview. That's another big problem in this case that, you know, this is not going to work out well.
Coming up next, our final news roundup and information overload hour.
It's BS. I mean, the radio ads actually were taken down in six stations because they were false. You know, this ad alleging that somehow I received something, totally false. We needed a place to stay for 4 months. And so I paid full boat, got nothing for free, nothing for discount. And there's just no there.
Did DeSantis maybe pay below market value for the condo? Well, it doesn't look like it. A similar property in the same building is listed for rent at less than $1,700 per month, not $2,000 a month, which DeSantis paid.
He owned the condo, and he'll tell you, I paid him higher rent than any of the other tenants he had, and I paid the full rent up front, no questions asked. And they try to act like he's a defense contract. He's never had a defense contract. It's never been anything he's been involved with. And he's never come to me for anything having anything to do with what I'm doing.
All right, news roundup and information overload hour, 800-941-SHAWN. If you want to be a part of the program, big news on this, the president's announcement on the Iranian deal. We continue our coverage of all of that. We've got a lot of deep state fallout, Russiagate redactions, the pressure now on the attorney general, and so much more. We have good news on the economy as well that nobody's talking about. That was Ron DeSantis, Freedom Caucus member, again, really the only people in Washington I now trust, you know, now is running for governor of the state of Florida. And everything, this is an amazing double standard. If you are a conservative, if you're if you're somebody that believes in conservatism, if you support the president, you get a vetting unlike anything the media has ever done in their lives. They sat back for 10 years. They never vetted Obama's relationship with Ayers and Dorn and Wright and Alinsky as a disciple and an Acorn activist and Frank Marshall Davis and Black Liberation Theology. But the latest technique is the media, in conjunction with liberal activists that pay money, you know, will look at every single minute detail and throw out more innuendo, more lies, more propaganda, more information, only if it's a conservative. We've experienced it on a regular basis. We get hit harder than we ever have. And it's because we're effective at exposing the biggest corruption, abuse of power scandal in the country. And we like this president. Well, the same thing is happening to Ron DeSantis. And Congressman, I thought your answer was spot on, incredible. It is amazing that you're being vetted more than the media ever vetted Barack Obama.
Oh, I know. I mean, this is totally fake news. I rented a condo at full price. End of story. No problem. And remember Obama, they didn't want to talk about all the things with him. We just now saw, remember, Sean, a few months ago, the picture with Louis Farrakhan. The media spiked that. They didn't want to put it out there. But you're exactly right. When you stand up, when you lead for conservative principles, when you're supporting the president, when you're trying to hold people in positions of authority like the Comeys, like the McCabes accountable, people shoot at you. And they shoot at you with a lot of fake news. But I think most of your listeners understand this stuff's garbage, and I think it'll probably end up helping me in the long run.
Look at the polls out today that show that the American people now see this entire Russia scandal, special counsel, has been nothing but a lie and a political witch hunt. It's taken a while, but they understand now that this was manufactured and was never true.
And you have a federal judge on Friday, incredibly, saying, you guys don't care about Manafort and bank fraud. This thing was 10 years ago. How does this have anything to do with the 2016 campaign? You're just trying to throw whatever you can and hope that Manafort or someone will say something so you can go after the president. And the judge had them dead to rights on that. And I think also people see it wasn't as reported, but Saturday, a different judge denied Mueller a continuance because they indicted those Russian troll farms thinking that they would never have to actually bring it to trial. Well, one of the companies showed up with attorneys and said, okay, arraign me. You know, we didn't do anything wrong. We want the discovery. And Mueller wasn't ready to do the case. They did the big press conference with Rosenstein and everything. So I think the wheels have really started to come off on the whole Mueller enterprise.
Well, I think so. And I think that Friday, I think you're right. I mean, I'd never heard of T.S. Ellis III, but I will tell you, people have said this is the real deal. I've read all 50 pages now four times of that hearing in the Manafort case on Friday. By the way, of all people, Andrew Weissman, Robert Mueller's pit bull, was the lead attorney for the special prosecutor as this beatdown went on. This is what the judge said. You don't really care about Manafort's bank fraud. Well, the government does. You really care about information that Mr. Manafort can give you that would reflect on Mr. Trump or lead to his prosecution or his impeachment or whatever. That's what you're really interested in. And none of this information has anything to do with links or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of Donald Trump. Now, and then he went on and on about how does something in 2005, a deal with the Ukraine, have anything to do with this? And I sat stunned. And every time that the Mueller teams tried to answer a question, the judge would say, you're not answering my question. I'd never read anything that's spectacularly stunning in terms of a judicial beatdown.
And he hit on really, I think, the cardinal sin of this whole enterprise, and it's this. In a normal investigation, you know that there's some type of crime that's occurred. Maybe money's missing from a bank. Maybe someone's been defrauded. And then you're supposed to investigate the facts to try to see if you can hold someone accountable for that. That is not what this investigation has been about from the beginning. It's basically been about, let's have a totally open-ended investigation with the unstated, but I think obvious purpose of get
Donald Trump one way or another. And that's why you see going in all these other areas that have nothing to do with the presidential election of 2016. So the judge, I think that was a remarkable hearing, and I think it was a breath of fresh air.
All right, so the president today, this nuclear deal will create an arms race in the Middle East, and the president, I think, made the right decision today. Another, by the way, campaign promise kept by the president, and more importantly, the naivete of people like Barack Obama and John Kerry and others and Hillary Clinton that believe that somehow a rogue regime that chants death to America, death to Israel, could be bribed and persuaded through, you know, $150 billion to be better to the world community. Well, Prime Minister Netanyahu blew that all out of the water last week. So we're now out of this deal as it relates to the president. You know, it doesn't address any of their ballistic missiles. It allows the centrifuges to spin. There are no real inspections. It paid them an enormous amount of money. Where do we go from here? And did John Kerry violate the Logan Act in your view?
Well, I know that if Sally Yates is going to send a fleet of FBI agents to interview Michael Flynn for a potential Logan Act violation, well, gee, Kerry is way more into that territory than there. I mean, I think the Logan Act's probably unconstitutional, but Kerry, what he did is much more egregious than anything Flynn did as somebody in a transition trying to talk to foreign leaders. But I think you're right. I mean, the problem with the Iran deal, it's a massive amount of money to the mullahs, which they are using to wreak havoc throughout the Middle East, but the inspections don't even get into Iran's military sites. It doesn't deal with the ballistic missiles. So
Congressman, these are the mullahs that chant death to Israel, death to America. These are the mullahs responsible for killing Americans in Iraq and fighting proxy wars around the world. These are the mullahs that fund and foment terror throughout the world.
And exactly. And they have not changed their behavior at all since this. I mean, the Obama administration acted like, oh, well, Rouhani is more of a moderate. If we do this deal, that we can bring them into the community of nations. Are you kidding me? They've increased spreading terrorism. They're way more involved now in Syria and in Yemen and these places. So it's been a major disaster. And I think the only way you deal with Iran is to do it from a position of strength. You got to try to choke off as much money as possible, because most of the money that flows into that country, even normal business deals, ends up in the Revolutionary Guard Corps, which then gets put back into the field for terrorism and other types of activities. So the president's exactly right here, and we need to go a better course.
Let's talk about the status of Congress, Devin Nunes, your colleagues in the Freedom Caucus, people like Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, and their demand that Jeff Sessions now step up to the plate, and the slow walking that has developed, the absolute obstructing of a congressional investigation, not turning over subpoenaed documents, putting in false redactions, claiming national security when they don't exist. Is it going to come down to a contempt order against the Attorney General of the United States?
If you're not willing to use powers like that, then I don't see how the behavior changes, Sean. I mean, they've been doing this stuff for a long time. Not all of it has been Sessions. A lot of it's been Rosenstein. A lot of it's been the FBI. But as you pointed out, these redactions they put in have nothing to do with national security. It's trying to protect people like Comey and other people in the bureaucracy. And they've slow-walked documents for months and months. And so the question is, we're already into May. You know, Congress cuts out of here in August, and we have the elections. Not much is going to get done August, September, October, November. So then you come back in a lame duck session, and who knows what the election outcome is going to be. But we could miss a historic opportunity to bring accountability to the government. So I think you need to press that button now. And here's the thing. If you schedule and go through with contempt, I'll bet you don't even end up voting on it on the House floor, because I think they probably will just cave and produce the documents at that point.
Yeah, I agree. Let me say this. You know, it's very sad to me as we see the upper echelon of some of the most respected institutions we have. I grew up in a family of law enforcement and cousins in the NYPD. My mom worked in a prison. My father, my dad worked in family court probation. I had other people in the FBI. I mean, and that was the creme de la creme. That was the height of success for, you know, a second generation, you know, Irish American. And there's so many good people in our intel community that put their lives on the line for us. Same with the CIA, same with the FBI. And yet these powerful tools of intelligence now, through unmasking and leaking intelligence, have have been turned now against the American people. Clearly, felonies were committed by Hillary Clinton. We've identified them, and the evidence is incontrovertible, and people like Comey and Strzok and Page and others put the fix in. And then they lied to a FISA court to get an application, on a FISA application to get a warrant to spy on a Trump campaign associate. They never verified the information, and they never told the judges in the original application, three subsequent applications, that, in fact, Hillary bought and paid for the unverified information. That, to me, is an abuse of power, the likes of which we've never seen.
And I think it tarnishes the good work of some of the people you mentioned. I mean, when I served in Iraq, when I was in the military, you had CIA guys doing all kind of stuff, intel, you had FBI agents involved, counterterrorism. I mean, these people were risking their lives for us, obviously, in the home front. There's a lot that the FBI does and has historically done very well. But what I fear is going to happen is, because of the Strzoks, because of the Pages, because of people like Clapper and Brennan, I think that it's going to probably make the FBI have a little bit higher hill to climb on some of these cases, because I think there's just going to be more skepticism when the average well-meaning agent goes in. I think that's very unfortunate. But, Sean, I don't see any way around that given what we've witnessed over the last year and a half.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back more with Freedom Caucus member, gubernatorial candidate from the great state of Florida, Ron DeSantis, is with us. So big breaking news today. The president has withdrawn the United States from the Iran nuclear deal, U.S. to withdraw from that deal. The president made a big announcement earlier, just before the show today. We'll have full details on Hannity tonight.
And actually, what we did is try to work with Republicans in the House and with the Senate to go in and say, all right, where's money that we've appropriated prior to that Omni that hasn't been spent yet? Where are pools of money hiding that we've spent in previous years that we go and sort of claw back your money that's sort of sitting in slush funds at various agencies? And that's where we found this $15 billion.
So, that, you know, that's interesting that you could look at money unspent and find $15 billion of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of it.
So where specifically is it, Director? Walk us through where this money actually can be taken back.
Yeah, as you mentioned, some of it is in those health insurance programs. Again, that's money that is either not authorized or not expected to be spent, so we can take that money back without impacting the programs. Then there's other funds of money that actually go all the way back to the stimulus, the way it worked back then. In fact, it still works this way a little bit, but was certainly a lot more under the previous administration, was they simply threw a bunch of money at various agencies and it said, here, you can have this money for as long as you want it or need it. There have been loan programs in there since 2011 that have not been active. There's stimulus programs that still have money in them. So we're going to find that taxpayer money and claw it back and put it back in the treasury.
All right, so then there really is no plan then to rescind that $1.3 trillion spending bill that obviously even the conservatives, the Republicans, were up in arms over. There's no way to change that at this point.
Well, there's a way to change it, but we're taking this down. We're breaking it in step by step, right? If this passes, it will be the largest rescissions package to pass in history. So we could have sent up a request for $250 billion. Certainly, we could have found that money easily if we had wanted to, but if it doesn't pass, it doesn't make any difference. How do we actually save taxpayer money? And if this passes, the largest ever, we think that's a success for the administration and for the country.
All right, that's Director Mick Mulvaney. Now, the rescission package clawback to the omnibus budget arrived on Capitol Hill. It's going to claw back $15 billion as it relates to the nation's budget by appropriating funding that has not yet been spent from federal programs, according to the budget director of the White House, Mick Mulvaney, who joins us now. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm not going to surprise you by saying that people like myself and a lot of conservatives were pretty pissed about that deal, and even the president himself was pretty angry about it.
He was. But, you know, I'll tell you what I think I told you a couple weeks back, which is that was the price that you have to pay in extortion when you've got a 60-vote rule in the Senate. Every time we went to the Democrats and said, look, we need more money. Here's what's happening in North Korea. Here's what's happening with our other adversaries and you know, competitors around the world. We need more money for defense. They said, oh, that's great. We'd be happy to give you more money for defense if you give us more money for our priorities as well. And when they have that 60-vote rule in the Senate, they hold you hostage. If you want to defend the nation, you end up giving in. And that's exactly what we had to do. Wasn't happy about it. The president obviously wasn't happy about it, but we got the money we needed to defend the nation. And then the next day he turns around to me and says, okay, that's over. How can we go some other places and save some money someplace? And that's what gave rise to this rescission.
Yeah. Is this the most we could have gotten out of this? I know you were on with our friend Maria Bartiromo. You said, you know, it's money that is either not authorized, not expected to be spent. Is there more of that money potentially available? And the next question I have is, what extent, if any, because I've read a couple articles suggesting that the federal budget or income to the government coffers, is going through the roof and we're setting records because of the Trump tax cut bill. Is that true?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I'll deal with that second point first. Yeah, the CBO came out yesterday, and you know, I've been critical of the CBO and will continue to do so, but this is a pretty simple practice they're undertaking. They're just counting money into the Treasury in April, and it turns out it's actually just over $500 billion in 1 month. That is the greatest amount of money in a single month in the history of the country. And of course, it comes back to what we've been saying all along with these economic policies of the president: the taxes, deregulation, energy independence, which is, if you make more money, the government takes in more money. Everybody wins, and we want people to make more money. We want people to build wealth for their families, build their savings, and build their incomes, because that's where our money comes from. And I think that that April money, April number shows that things are actually starting to work out already. On the rescissions package question you asked, could have been bigger. Sure. The question is, again, I'll say the same thing I said to Maria, which is, I could have sent down a quarter of $1 trillion worth of rescissions, but if it doesn't pass, it doesn't save a penny. By sending down $15 billion, which is still a lot of money, keep in mind, that's $15,000 million. That we can save right now, and that actually has a pretty good chance of passing. We'll continue to look at the budget. Every time you spend $1 trillion, which we do on the discretionary part of the budget, the non-Social Security, non-Medicare, it's just over, you know, $1.2 trillion. The time you do that, there's always going to be money that gets misspent, misallocated, forgotten about, that kind of stuff, and that's what these rescissions are designed to clean up. So this is an ongoing process, not something that's special or unusual.
You know, it's very important, and I know that the president felt very strongly that it's sort of like when Reagan became president, we had a gap of vulnerability in terms of our defense spending had been reduced so much in the 8 years of Obama that it has created a gap that needed to be filled. He did it to get the money for the military for these couple of years. Now, the president is talking about, when we get back to budget issues in September, that he is all for a government shutdown if there's not full funding of the wall. One thing I think we learned today about the president, when he says something, he kind of means it, and that's his track record. I got to believe the president's willing to go to the mat, because this has been probably one of his biggest, if not biggest, promise during his campaign, that he's going to get that wall built on the southern border.
Oh, and he asks me about it every time we talk. He's like, where can we find money for the wall? Can we use this rescission money for the wall? Where can we get more money for the wall? I mean, he's talked to the Defense Department about it. He's talked to, goodness gracious, we talked to U.S. Fish and Wildlife about it. Problem is, the Democrats are smart, and they put stuff in every single appropriations bill that ties our hands. And again, when you have to have 60 votes in the Senate, you're just forced into making those types of decisions. And that's take another look, I changed gears for just a second. A great example with this rescission bill, once it passes, and I really do think it has a chance to pass, look what will have passed under 50 votes, because the rescission package is 50 votes in the Senate. That means the tax bill has already passed with 50 votes. All of these CRAs, Congressional Review Act, getting rid of the regulations, has passed with 50, and the rescission will pass as 50. You sort of get a feeling what the world would look like if we didn't have this crazy filibuster rule in the Senate. It would actually be really good pieces of legislation.
Why doesn't Mitch McConnell get rid of it at this point, considering it is clearly outdated? We've had at other times in our history, it was never the case. You can't move in this partisan era. You can't get a lot done because of it. The president basically has to thread the needle and do everything on his own, because he has this, you know, massive hurdle to climb every time. Why not just get rid of it? Why won't Mitch McConnell dump it?
Well, the beauty of it is, he doesn't even have to go that far. All you have to do, Sean, is make them work. Make them talk the way it used to be on Mr. Smith, you know, Goes to Washington, the old movies and stuff. It used to be that if you wanted to filibuster, which is what forces that 60-vote threshold, you had to go to the floor and speak. And the rest of the Senate shut down. Then they changed the rules for their own benefit about 40 years ago, so they can go to fundraisers, they can go to dinner, they can have committee meetings during a filibuster, and essentially it makes it a 60-vote rule for everything. It's supposed to be the exception, not the rule. If they simply go back to the way the rules used to be, you can still protect the rights of the minority, you can still protect the rights of individual senators, but you don't have this de facto 60-vote rule for everything. So they don't have to go and get rid of the rule entirely. They just have to make the senators work, make them talk. That would be a great way to fix the system and to get it back to where it's supposed to be.
You think we could ever get to a balanced budget?
You're going to get a balanced budget. You're going to do it the same way we did it in the 1990s. And that's why I was so excited about those April numbers and the rescission package, because you've heard me say this before. In the 1990s, they did it not by cutting spending. It's almost impossible to cut spending in Washington, D.C. Both parties like to spend money. They just do, bottom line. At the end of the day, that there's a majority in Congress that wants to spend more dough, because no one's ever lost a job for borrowing more money. So cutting your way to balance is nearly impossible. How did we do it in the 1990s? We had fiscal restraint. We slowed the rate of our growth while our economy grew faster. So our revenues grew faster than our expenses. That's what's so exciting about what happened last month, is you add those CBO numbers from April, which is a 13% increase in our revenues over last year. You have a rescission package that shows we're bringing some fiscal discipline back to Washington, D.C. That's the mixture, a healthy economy and fiscal restraint that got us to balance in the 1990s and can get us to balance again.
All right, Mick Mulvaney, thanks for being with us. I don't know how you go through all those numbers every day. I think it'd give me a heart attack. It's so annoying and frustrating, and the amount of money government spends is unbelievable. I wish you guys would adopt the penny plan. Is that ever possible?
It is. In fact, we put two penny plan in the budget last year. Really, what I'd rather do is I'd like to outlaw the words billion and trillion, because it makes it sound like it's not that much money. People say, oh, $15 billion is not that much. It's $15,000 million. A trillion is 1,000 billion or 1,000,000,000. So it's the language we really need to change. Just remind people there's a bunch of money being spent on their behalf. And we're happy if we can pass this rescission, at least we find your money that's been hiding these accounts and claw it back for you.
All right. We really appreciate your time. Mick Mulvaney with us, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. Let's get to some busy phones. We got Kathy is in Deerfield Beach in Florida. Kathy, how are you? We're glad you called. What a historic day this is.
It is. Thank you for taking my call. You know, we finally got a president that's finally making his promises. You know, I'm 65 years old, and I've seen quite a few presidents, and I've never seen one that fulfilled the promises like our president. I love Trump. I've loved him from day one. And, you know, I just wanted to call and thank you for everything you do. And this Iran deal, I am so glad he voted against it.
Well, I got to tell you, the one thing that I like and respect the most about Donald Trump is look at what he did with moving the capital of Israel to its rightful place, Jerusalem. So many other presidents promised they didn't have the courage to do it. This is the worst deal. He said it was the worst deal in the history of mankind, and he's right. And now look what the president pulled off here, and he's pulling the U.S. out of this horrific Iranian deal. This president said he'd cut taxes. He's doing it to the extent he was able on his own. He has rolled back all of these burdensome regulations. America is now positioned to be energy independent. They have beaten and pushed out ISIS. And I mean, there literally is so many success stories, but there's not one media outlet except Fox and talk radio that will give him any credit for the things that he has done. It is unbelievable. You know, literally, I watched on one of these cable channels, they say, the president violated the deal with the Iranian mullahs. It's a violation. And I'm like, are you people really that stupid? Are you people really that insane? And he's been able to basically undo so much of the damage in just a little over a year that Barack Obama inflicted on the country. This was a dumb deal. You know, when Bill Clinton said, this is a good deal for the American people and North Koreans are not going to get nukes. We just bribed our way to peace. Well, he didn't say it quite that way, but he suggested the $3 billion in energy subsidies, et cetera, we're going to prevent the North Koreans from getting nuclear weapons. Well, they got them. And as Prime Minister Netanyahu pointed out, guess what? The Iranians had a nuclear program and they've lied to the world. And it shouldn't shock or surprise anyone. They were chanting death to America before the cargo planes landed with cash and other currencies adding up to $150 billion. And guess what? They were chanting death to America, death to Israel after. And they are the number one terrorist nation on earth. They've killed Americans in Iraq. They're fighting multiple proxy wars around the world. They're the number one funders of terror and fomenting terror around the globe. And if you ever marry radical Islam with nuclear weapons, it could very well equal a modern day Holocaust, because we've seen that radical Islamists have no problems at all killing innocent men, women, and children. As a matter of fact, they feel good about it. They consider such acts and an act of greatness and goodness that will be rewarded with 72 virgins in wherever they think you're going. So we've seen this before, this movie before. We know who these people are, meaning the radical Islamists. We know who the Mullahs are. And our only hope will be is if the people of Iran, you know, can one day stand up and somehow take their country back. Because I don't think the people of Iran like living in tyranny. The problem is, like in any other case, when you have the Quds forces and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and you have people in power that are willing to kill innocent people, it's not easy to win any type of revolution with a slingshot. And so the people are at a very, very big disadvantage. And unless somehow these people get armed, well, you know, it's going to remain that way. And women will be, you know, treated horribly. Gays and lesbians will be killed. Christians and Jews will be persecuted. And the fomenting of terror will continue. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. All right, an incredible news day with the president withdrawing from the Iranian deal. We're going to compare those that are appeasers and those that believe in peace through strength. You won't see this anywhere else. Sebastian Gorka, Dan Bongino. Also, the latest on the press by Devin Nunes and the House Freedom Caucus to get the information they have subpoenaed now forever, and much, much more. 9 Eastern, set your DVR. Hannity on the Fox News Channel. See you tonight at 9. As always, thanks for being with us. Back here tomorrow.